Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to get rid of any eunuchs in the crew of the Enterprise, too bold will go where no man has gone before. Captain Albert, stardate 7428.14. I am still secretly obsessed with Lieutenant Uhura's bottom, but thankfully have now stopped giving away my secret. We will shortly be landing on the planet Pundit, a planet about which we know nothing whatsoever, or even less. However, my ever-dependable First Officer, Mr. Spock, has put his uncannily logical mind to work and come up with the answer that, as the word Pundit originates from the subcontinent of India, that it will, in all probability, be populated by Indians. However, he's not so sure about cowboys. Last week, despite our every precaution, the Enterprise's mission was once again interrupted by a radio show. Subsequently, I informed Federation headquarters, and they have now taken appropriate action. We are now... Mr. Sulu, what is the cause of this?
I am not sure, Captain. We seem to have collided with a radio sound effects department.
Impossible. We are millions...
No, Captain! Floating in through the Enterprise's ventilation system.
It is some sort of strange-looking liquid.
What shall we do, Captain? The bridge is already a foot deep in the strange liquid.
Bones, an analysis of the strange liquid.
Organic, water-based, the water being H2O, if I'm not mistaken. And water containing particles of meat and vegetable matter. Also grains of barley.
Water, particles of meat and vegetables, barley. Do you realize what this means, Jim?
You don't mean...
Yes. The broth of Khan.
Mr. Sulu, an estimation of the current height of the broth.
Lieutenant Uhura, what height would you say the broth is now?
Well, it's already up to the seat of my chair.
It's on the seat of Uhura's chair.
What's on the seat of Uhura's chair?
Uhura's bottom. I mean, so that means that the broth is already about 18 inches high.
And look, Captain, a different sort of liquid is seeping through the roof. This one is a clear meat soup.
Mr. Spock, a resume?
No, it's a consomme, Jim.
Spock.
Jim.
Don't be such a prat.
The broth of Khan is now 2 feet deep and still rising, Captain.
Thank you, Mr. Sulu. Mr. Spock, what would you say are our chances of survival?
That depends. You will have noticed that the broth, in addition to the other ingredients, also contains little pasta letters of the alphabet, which have formed themselves into meaningless words. Words which I have put into this food mincer, which I am now about to switch on.
Don't mince words, Spock.
I must, Jim, but I don't know why. It's as if some strange force is compelling me to.
Look, Captain! Now coming in with the broth. Loaves of bread.
Bones, I want a detailed chemical breakdown of one of the loaves immediately.
I have already taken the liberty of analyzing one, Jim.
And?
Although it contains all the elements of what we have come to accept as a loaf, it is not loaf as we know it.
Lieutenant Uhura, inform Federation headquarters of our plight immediately.
I've already tried, Captain, but on all the command frequencies I've tried, I keep getting blocked by what seems to be a sort of conserve of fruit and sugar, which has been boiled together.
A conserve of fruit and sugar? You mean...
Yes, someone's jamming my frequencies.
In that case, you'd better...
Jamming your frequencies? Of course. So that's it.
Spock?
I've just realized what is happening, Jim, and the true nature of the planet Pundit.
Then brief me without delay, Spock.
At once. Briefing you now, Jim.
Spock, why are you putting those ladies' briefs on me?
I can't help myself, Jim. It's another pun, you see.
Another pun?
Yes, you see, I was wrong about why the planet Pundit is called by that name. For it is now clear to me that it is the pun that is the operative part of the word. Because now that we have entered the atmosphere of Pundit, it is causing us all to make the most frightful puns.
But if this is true, Spock, it could jeopardize our entire dialogue.
Captain Kirk, two of the inhabitants of the planet Pundit are trying to board the Enterprise. They are covered in hardy-climbing, leguminous green plants whose seeds grow in pods and are used as food.
Covered in hardy-climbing, leguminous green plants?
Yes, they come in peas.
They come in peas? That must be the worst pun that I've ever heard in my life.
The puns won't get any worse than that, Jim, unless I'm badly mistaken.
Captain, I have to report that the fore end of the right-hand side of the Enterprise is completely covered with condoms.
You don't mean...
Yes, there's Klingons on the starboard.
I was badly mistaken.
Fortunately, it matters not, Spock, as we are all but 5 minutes into our mission.
Jim?
You see, Spock, as we keep getting interrupted by a radio show 5 minutes into our mission, Federation headquarters have decreed that in future, all our missions will be of 5 minutes' duration only, thus defeating whoever is...
Yes, go on, Jim.
We've finished.
Finished?
Yes, we've done 5 minutes. Our mission is over.
But our mission isn't over, is it?
Spock?
I mean, we haven't been interrupted by a radio show, have we?
Yes, you're right, Spock. But we will be, I'm sure. I find it rather embarrassing standing here waiting like this, Spock.
Maybe if you took the lady's briefs off, Captain.
Thank you, Mr. Sulu. Any suggestions, Mr. Spock?
Well, you sort of bend slightly at the knee.
Suggestions about how we can get out of this dilemma we find ourselves in, Mr. Spock.
Well, we could simply switch the radio on.
Brilliant, Mr. Spock. Quite brilliant.
The real alternative to cosmetic surgery is the injection of sheep hormones, which have the effect of enriching the natural oils of the skin and can make mature women look years younger. With me in the Living Body studio is Mrs. Jill Bickerstaff, who herself had a course of sheep hormone implants some 2 years ago. I believe I'm right in saying, Mrs. Bickerstaff.
Yes.
And would you say that you were quite happy with the results?
Yes. And no.
Yes, I gather there have been certain side effects, which you're not completely happy about.
Yes, I've had to change my diet.
So, what don't you eat now, which you did eat before you had the sheep hormone implants?
Doner kebab.
And have there been any other side effects?
Yes. Our dog.
What about your dog?
It keeps worrying me.
Worrying you? In what way?
It keeps rounding me up. And making me go through gates. I went into a multi-story car park 17 times yesterday and I haven't even got a car. Don't think I'm turning into a you, do you?
Well, I mean, I'm not an expert on things like this, of course, but indeed it does seem possible.
Oh, great.
You don't mind?
No, I've always wanted a sheepskin coat.
It's nice that you're taking it so well, Mrs. Bickerstaff. I'm sure you'll...
Sergeant McKnight, I was listening to that.
Hey, I'm sorry, WPC Norris, but this is, after all, a police radio we're listening to, and it is important that I keep in touch with what's happening in the area. Now, where's that police channel?
That's right, Inspector. So then I put it to the proprietor of the Golden Godiva nightclub that the white powdery substance that we found on his premises was, in fact, cocaine. He denied this and claimed it was self-raising flour.
Now, did you test it, Constable?
Oh, yes, sir. I made a nice sponge cake with it with a strawberry jam filling.
No. Did you test it to see if it was cocaine, you stupid twatter?
I did, sir. And after testing the substance in question by inhaling it up my nose in the prescribed manner, I'm entirely satisfied that it is not cocaine.
You're sure, Constable?
Absolutely, sir. And so is Ronald.
Ronald? Who's he?
He's the 20-foot-high green psychedelic rabbit who's standing beside me.
Headquarters to all mobiles. We have some further information for you on the supermarket break-in last night. Apparently, the only food stolen was taken from the bottom shelves and out of the chest freezers. You are asked to keep a lookout for a very cold dwarf.
This is PC Edwards reporting from the car park at Gatwick Airport. No stolen cars to report. In fact, there aren't any cars here at all to report. Oh, very strange it is, because it's such a big car park, too. It must be about a mile long by 50 yards wide. Made with two rows of pretty lights down the middle, and there's something to ride. This is PC Edwards, who's just popping home to change his trousers.
Right, WPC Norris, you can have that program on about that sheep woman if you like now. But first I'll inform HQ that we've arrived at the scene and we are about to start surveillance.
Oh, look, Sergeant, over there. A mountain rescue team, isn't it?
Oh, come on, hurry it up, will you? We haven't got all day.
Sorry, Bernard.
Oh, if we're going to be able to rescue that climber, speed is absolutely essential, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry, I keep slipping, you see. It's these shoes.
Shoes? You're wearing shoes?
Yeah, look.
Oh, good God, we've got a mountain to scale, and you're wearing patent leather shoes.
Well, you see, I thought it were a Wednesday at the village hall, but it were a Tuesday.
What was Tuesday?
Enrollment night for the formation dancing team. And as I found out later, Wednesday turned out to be the night for enrolling for the mountain rescue team.
And what have you got in your haversack, then? A pair of gold lamé trousers and a sequin waistcoat?
No, go away.
What on earth is that?
What?
That thing you're carrying under your arm, is that your survival bag?
Yes, for putting exposure victims in so that the aluminium foil heats their bodies and gives them a better chance of survival.
Give it here. Good grief, you've got a turkey in here.
Well, my wife Anna run out of tin foil, you see, so I lent it to her, and it was still in the oven when I got called out.
Move it, will you? It's at least another mile to the foot of the mountain, then we've got a stiff one-hour climb.
Climb?
That's what I said.
You mean up?
About 2,500 feet.
You see, I suffer from vertigo.
You what?
Vertigo. It's a fear of...
I know what bloody vertigo is. What are you doing in a mountain rescue team if you suffer from vertigo?
I was thinking I might help out on flat mountains.
There are no such things as flat mountains.
Look, Table Mountain, that must be a bit flat. And it's
look, all mountains are up.
Yeah, well, as I said, I did think I was joining the formation dancing team because I'm very keen on dancing. It's not my fault if I suffer from vertigo, is it?
That's all very well. But look, this rescue will be a two-man job.
Well, when I dance, I forget all my worries.
What?
Well, if I was dancing, I'd probably forget all about my fear of heights. Perhaps we could dance up the mountain.
Dance up the mountain?
Well, it's the only way you're going to get me up there.
Oh, come on, then.
Take your partners. Or we'll be coming round the mountain when we come. We'll be coming round the mountain when we come. We'll be coming.
We present the 17th minute of the show, and tonight our guest is that well-known TV scientist, Professor Heinz Wolf.
Hello there! Professor Heinz Wolf here. You've probably heard of me. I used to be called Heinz Mayonnaise, but I changed my name because people kept tossing me in salads. But even so, I changed my name. People, they still kept tossing me in salads. Probably because I changed it to Hellman's Mayonnaise. Finally, I changed it to Heinz Wolf. You have probably seen me on television in the Great Egg Race. Pity I changed my name. We could have called it the Great Egg Mayonnaise Arise. You may also have seen my TV commercial for Epson Computers. Doing it was a very traumatic experience for me, because when they asked me to do it, instead of Epson, I thought they said Elsan, and I spent 2 weeks practicing on a chemical toilet. So maybe they wanted me to talk a lot of crap. And I was right. Now, it is my job as a presenter of scientific programs to impart scientific knowledge. For example, tonight I'm going to explain the difference between positive ions and negative ions. Already? Huh? Well, a positive ion is what you use when you definitely want to press your trousers, but you use a negative ion if you're not too sure about it. But what I really want to explain to you tonight is that this whole business of explaining things, of imparting scientific knowledge, is so very difficult, because these things are not easy for the average man to understand. Why is this thing so? Well, the answer is very simple. When you talk like me, nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. And this is good, because if you could understand me, you would learn things, and there would be no more need for me to explain them, would there? And I would be out of my job. So, keep watching. Auf Wiedersehen.
Professor Heinz Wolf, ladies and gentlemen, soon to team up with James Burke in a major new documentary series aimed at explaining the nature of every known sphere, entitled All Balls. And now back to the mountain rescue team.
Coming round the mountains, coming round the mountains when we come, singing I will if you will, so will I.
Oh, look, Sergeant McKnight, those mountain rescuers, they're dancing.
Yes.
Well, they must have gone potty, haven't we? Better do something.
Not likely, WPC Norris. We don't want to blow our cover, do we? I mean, we're not supposed to be the police, remember? We're posing as a courting couple in the back seat, aren't we? Whilst we're on surveillance.
Sergeant?
WPC?
What exactly are we supposed to be surveying? I mean, we've...
Well, been... somebody's coming. Quick, start kissing me.
I was asking what crime we expect to see committed, Sergeant. I mean, we've been coming here every night for the last 18 months, and we haven't...
Somebody's coming. Quick, start kissing me.
No, there isn't.
Yes, there is. Quick, start kissing
me. No, there isn't. And I've a very shrewd suspicion that there never is anybody coming when you say there is, Sergeant. I think you're just saying, somebody's coming, quick, start kissing me, so that I'll have to start kissing you. I'm right, aren't I, Sarge?
Shh, somebody's coming, quick, start kissing
me. No, there is not somebody coming, Sarge. Oh, there really is somebody coming. It's a man.
Yes, there's somebody coming. Quick, start kissing me.
Look, he's tapping on the window. I wonder who it is.
Well, we'll soon find out. Yes, who are you?
I'm a Danny Seddon, and this is my wife, Fanny.
Fanny, can you direct us to St. Thomas's Hospital?
Yes. You take the first turn on your right.
We should know, really, where it is, because it's the hospital I was in when I had an operation to have something removed.
The one, that was the one where you woke up while they were still stitching you up,
Fanny. Stitching me up. I was just glad that you were there holding my hand, Danny.
And your appendix as well, remember? Because you'd asked the doctor if you could have it.
Have it for a memento?
No, for the cat.
Oh. It was my tonsils we kept as a memento, wasn't it?
Look, do you mind, you two? I'm a busy man.
Yes, well, we're off now to St. Thomas's. I mean, mustn't be late, must we,
mustn't
Fanny?
Mustn't be late, Danny, because I'm going to be operated on to have something else removed.
Goodbye, officer.
Goodbye. Right then, WPC, that's me and you. Blast.
What's the matter?
He called me officer. This might mean being in plain clothes. He somehow knew that I was a policeman.
Well, maybe you should take your helmet off.
Good thinking, WPC. Even so, to absolutely convince anybody who might look into the car that we are just a courting couple, we're going to have to make our courting look more realistic. So, I am going to put my hand on your bosoms, WPC Norris. Purely in the line of duty, you understand. I shan't enjoy it. There we are, and... maybe you could moan a bit.
No!
With passion. I mean, that's what lovers on the back seat of cars do, isn't it? And we must convince anyone looking in that we are a genuine courting couple.
I don't think we're going to be able to do that, Sergeant.
Why not?
Well, we're in a police car, aren't we?
Yes, but it's a plain black one, isn't it? Which I have taken the precaution of removing all police insignia from, so that it is, to all intents, just like a normal car. Apart from the blue light on top. And because it looks like a normal car, anyone looking inside will think that we're normal people, won't they? Especially as we're in plain clothes.
You're in plain clothes. I'm not in any clothes. I'm naked.
Yeah, well, that's the way young ladies who get on the back seat with their boyfriend usually are, isn't it, WPC? And we do want to make our cover as realistic as possible, don't we?
Well, I suppose so.
Good. Brace yourself, then.
Brace myself?
I'll try to be gentle with you. Police boots permitting.
Gentle with me? What the? Sergeant! Ooh. What are you doing?
Oh! Now, this is all in the line of duty.
HQ to Sergeant McKnight. HQ to Sergeant McKnight. What is your position?
Lads on me back with me right foot in the strap hanger and me... Wilbraham Road on surveillance duty.
Proceed at once to Millpond School, Wilbraham Road, where we have a report of a disturbance.
Millpond School, that's just over the road. Come on, WPC, put your clothes on and follow me.
Right. If you call yourself a headmaster, I've a good mind to hit you with my umbrella. I will hit you with my umbrella.
Oh, I, please, please, Mrs. Tibbs, I implore you, and all you other parents, too, if you will, just give me the chance to explain.
I'll give you a punch up.
Here, you put that headmaster down immediately. Now, what's all this about, then?
Well, I'm reporting back to the parents of the children I recently took on a school excursion to the African state of Bugansia, Sergeant. You see, a few of them are concerned.
You bet we're concerned. Where is my son, Giles? Well?
And my daughter, Selina.
And my son, Julian. You've lost him, haven't you?
No, of course I haven't lost him.
Well, then, where exactly in Bugansia is he?
In Kinshala, actually.
Yes, and my daughter, Selina.
She, too, is in Kinshala.
And my daughter, Tanya.
Tanya. Tanya has settled in Bugansia, Mr. Latimer. Now,
is he settled? Well, what do you mean, settled?
Well, the fact is that, we had to sell Tanya, Mr. Latimer.
Sell? What on earth for?
6 water buffaloes.
You see, the thing is, Mr. Latimer, that shortly after arriving in Bugansia, we were set upon by the fierce Matongo tribe who stole all our money. And without money, we couldn't buy food, of course. So we sold your daughter for 6 water buffaloes.
That is outrageous, Headmaster.
Oh, I agree. She was worth 8 water buffaloes at least. Lovely ex-pupil like Tanya, but the chief drove a very hard bargain.
I sincerely hope you didn't sell my daughter, Rebecca.
Oh, no.
Well, then where is she?
In Kinshala.
Well, when am I going to see her again?
And when am I going to see my son Giles again?
And my son Julian.
And my twins.
Yes, you look, come on, leave it.
Yes, Headmaster, 20 children in all went on this trip. Exactly how many returned?
None. So, what happened to them all?
Well, 12 are in Kinshala.
Well, I sincerely hope that number includes my twins, Benedict and Brinsley.
I'm afraid not.
Where are they, then?
Well, you see, Mrs. Gilbraith, you must understand that in the position in which we found ourselves, that certain sacrifices had to be made.
What sort of sacrifices?
Well, Benedict and Brinsley being burned at the stake sort of sacrifice.
My boys were sacrificed.
Oh, bravely, singing the school song. I'm sure you'll be happy to know, Mrs. Gilbraith. You see, it was the only way in which I could obtain food for the rest of us. My hands were tied. As a matter of fact, so were Benedict and Brinsley.
Oh!
I'm sorry, I don't suppose you'll want to hear too much of the horrible details, will you?
Oh!
Somebody send for Matron, will you? You see, parents, it was the only way I could get food so that the others could survive.
But look, you'd already got 6 water buffaloes.
Yes, but we hadn't got any vegetables, had we? Apart from Jones Minor. There's a responsible teacher. A balanced diet is foremost.
Responsible teacher? You call yourself responsible and you've taken 20 children on a school trip. You don't even know where any of them are.
No, that just isn't true. Because 12 of them are definitely in Kinshala. So I propose, therefore, that we let the matter rest there
yes,
for the four...
That still leaves 5 unaccounted for, doesn't it?
Yes.
So where are they?
They ran off into the jungle.
Why?
Well, when I put that question to Kinshala himself, he said... Oh, dear, I don't think I should have said that.
In Kinshala? You mean...
Yes, he's a cannibal. Unfortunately.
And he's eaten my daughter, Selina.
And my son, Julian.
I'm afraid so, and the other children. Now, however, the good news is that whilst we were away, the GCSE results came through, and between them they got no less than 45 O-levels. And now, if you'd all like to sit down, I'll put on the videotape I made of the trip and the happier times we had before we met up with Kinshala and the Matongo tribe. Ready, everyone?
Hello there, Terry Wogan here, bidding you a fond welcome indeed to the 1989 Eurovision Wogan Contest. Which is coming
oh dear,
tonight.
I put the wrong tape on. Never mind, I'm a great fan of Wogan, as are all the rest of my colleagues in the Out to Lunch Club.
So without any further of the old flannel from yours truly, let me hand you over to our host for this evening, my old friend Katie Boyler. Sorry, that should of course be Katie Boyle. Oh, I don't know, though. Anyway, whatever you want to call the old girl, here she is.
Thank you. Well, Terry, one way of getting those embarrassing stains out is to soak them in a solution of vinegar and lemon.
Now then, Katie, my girl, it's not one of your TV Times tips that all tell is after. So just get on and introduce the first contestant, will you?
Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome, representing Sweden, Bjorn Christian.
And this is, in fact, the second time that we've had the pleasure of seeing Bjorn Christian on the Eurovision Wogan Contest, so I suppose you could say that makes him a Bjorn again Christian. Ha ha ha!
Bjorn is age 24. He comes from a tiny, remote village in the extreme north of Sweden. He is training to be a VAT inspector, and his ambition is to be dead.
Well, good evening, Bjorn.
Good evening, Kati. Top of the morning to you, bejesus, bejabbers.
That you will be giving us your impression of Terry Wogan raising his eyebrows in surprise and giving his pop-eyed silly grin.
That is so, Kathy. And also to improving my chances of winning the Eurovision Wogan contest, I will be doing anything else I can think of which make me look a pillock.
Then, take it away, Bjorn.
Well, Bjorn has gone into his eyebrow-raising routine. And he's certainly making me Bjorn. That's for sure. The man is pathetic. He's no idea at all. No idea at all. Or to put that another way, he's no idea at all at all. I mean, not only has he failed to capture my pop-eyed silly grin, but he's also failing to look like a pillock. Despite his dance in an Irish jig over 5 pounds of assorted vegetables. And now he's got my pop-eyed silly grin off to perfection. He's just slipped and sat in the carrot.
Sweden. Now, will you please welcome the British entry?
And the British entry is Mr. Arnold Wand, a name to conjure with, I'm sure you know. And Arnold is going to sing like me, I believe.
When I wake up on a summer's morn, I take my breakfast on the lawn, the crunchiest toast you've ever seen, with lots of me favourite margarine. Then I do the Flora Margarine dance. Then it's time for business, so back home I leave, with me spreading belly and me black hair weave. Eggs, Kellogg's or Wrigley's gum, just leave it to tell, I'll bang your drum. Doing voiceovers for your TV ad, well at 50 grand a time, that can't be bad. Dog food, cat food or what have you, English cheddar or Danish blue, Beecham's powder or Beecham's pill, it's all just grist for Wogan's mill, and all my money in me bank balance. All together for the Flora dance.
The cheek of the man. Implying that where TV commercials are concerned, your old friend Tell would do anything. Me, an educated man like myself, with a BSc, a BA, a TWA, an Aer Lingus, and an Air France hold all, price only £25.95 from Ogden Airport.
And now, a big hand, please, for the Irish entry.
Irish entry, oh, that's me. So I'll just climb into the boot of this car.
And here's your script, Terry. Good luck.
Oh, thank you, Katie. Well, here I am speaking to you direct from the boot of the car. And what am I going to do, I hear you ask? Well, I just have to check my script. Oh, yes, evidently what's going to happen is that the car is going to be driven to a nearby scrapyard and dumped there. Then, a few minutes later, a forklift truck is going to pick up the car and drop it into the car crusher, where it'll be crushed into a little square about... Help! Help! Help!
You have been listening to Star Trek 2, starring Christopher Godwin, Jeffrey Holland, Susie Blake and Fred Harris.
Sie haben Star Trek 2 angehört mit Christopher Heinz Godwin, Jeffrey Heinz Nederland, Susan Heinz Blake und Fred Heinz Bean.
The show was written by Terry Ravenscroft,
Kaputt Schreibenstick by Jerry Ravenscroft,
and produced by Martin Fischer.
Produzent Martin Bormann. Oh, I'm sorry, Martin Fischer.